You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Oh, yes, you are. Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning, wherever you might be on this beautiful little rotating planet. We are currently in our winter phase. Lots of snow up here, a bit of snow down where Simon is. We're trudging through the tundra, mile after mile. Here we are. How are you doing, Simon?
Very well. You sound like Siberia when you talk about trudging through tundra. Maybe we'll find a woolly mammoth.
it's a quote from a Frank Zappa song, so we'll find St. Alfonso's pancake breakfast. Anyway, so do you have any announcements? I bet you do, but it's like there's nothing going on, is there?
I think if I didn't have any announcements, we would have broken through the barrier and we'd all be free. Right. It's been an incredibly, I think everybody knows it's been a really busy few days or few weeks since we crashed into 2018 in a positive way. Things have really, really been fast, and I've been, and I think many of us have been quite pushed to try to keep up to date with what's happening. So I'll go through what's come my way, and then people can check that up with anyone else, or you know, do their own research on it. Been a lot of debate, and I know that Andy, who does my brilliantly does the website and everything, he was saying, "What about this missile? What about this missile from Hawaii?" And I said, "Well, I'm still waiting for some more news to come through." And Andy said, "Yeah, but you haven't posted anything yet." And I said, "No, I promise, but I'm just waiting for something to come through." Well, something did come through, but so late on in the day that I haven't had time to post it. So I thought, well, I'll just do it on the radio show anyway. I think we're all fairly aware that really was a missile that was fired. And for those people who've been, you know, out of the country or sleeping or something, there was a report of a missile fired from a submarine in the Hawaii area. What was interesting was that large numbers of citizens received a text message, and some of them didn't actually receive a text message as such, but a screen message, like a screenshot, would come up on the phone. So some got text messages and some got a screenshot, and it basically said along the lines that there was an incoming ballistic missile and that they needed to take shelter straight away. What's obviously the first thing that's really important here is that Hawaii is a state of the United States of America. So any attack on Hawaii is in fact an attack on the United States of America. But any attack on Hawaii is not the mainland of the US. So when I say clever, I don't mean to be supporting it, but from a political point of view, it would be clever to attack the Hawaii or a region around there, because that would not be seen as an attack against the US mainland. But it nevertheless would be an attack. There was subsequently a big press put out that this was a fake, it was a hoax, there never had been, and it was just nonsense. What I'm being told was that it really was genuine, because people who perhaps have been listening to me for a few years will know that I got a tour around the space radar base in North Yorkshire, the Fylingdales space radar, and it detected this launch. Because this radar can see right round the planet, or jolly nearly right round the planet, and this missile was detected. The missile was actually, I don't know whether it was shot down or disabled. All I know is that the missile was dealt with. The text messages or warning messages went out were not from the evil government. They were just a standard protocol that goes out when self-defense radar picks up something like that and works out its course of its trajectory, where it's going to hit. The United States Navy then, using some rather special deep depth charges, which were actually not designed for human bases, but were designed to take out alien bases under the sea, very special form of depth charge, which, unlike a depth charge which you drop on a submarine, will explode whatever depth you set in the water. These were designed to hit the seabed and then blow up. And we don't call them, we call them deep underground submarine bases. And I have been told that a number of those were attacked using these very advanced type of depth charges, which means that this submarine hadn't come from a surface port. It had come from an undersea base. My own personal experience a number of years ago, that such bases do exist. Some of them are purely human. Some of them are human and off-planet operated. Nevertheless, the operators of these bases were not good people. So the latest news basically is that a number of high-ranking officials were at vantage points to observe this because they thought it would drag the United States into a war. And that's quite chilling. We'll talk about some of these high-ranking officials a bit later. All right, let's move on. Yeah, I'm sure most people are following that China has finally launched the gold yuan. That's the currency that's gold-backed. China has so much gold now, has more gold than any other country, individual country on the planet. And we will wait to see how that affects the petrodollar and everyone else for that matter. Well, that's a big thing. Following on economically on the 31st of January, the United States of America has to come to terms with its budget. It has to agree. You may remember that a little while back they just, what do we say in Britain? We say kicked it into touch. This issue came up and Trump was able to get the Senate and the Congress to defer the situation a little bit. That has now to be faced on the 31st of January. And I'm being told at the moment there is not enough money in the bank, for want of a better word, to balance the books. So they've got until the 31st of January to try to cobble something together. They have to, because if they don't, it's not just that Capitol Hill will come to a grinding halt. Basically, the economy of the United States will come to a halt. So that has to be sorted out. Let's move on now, still on the economic side. The Dow Jones has just a few days ago broken the 26,000 barrier. And the president is saying, you know, what's next? Is it the 30,000 barrier? Is that the next target? Maybe that'll be the next one. There are some rumors that, particularly the Rothschilds have set the target of 30,000 as the moment for a colossal stock market crash. I'm not convinced that's going to happen and I'll explain why, but let's just get this straight. Credible information has reached me that if the stock market is to reach 30,000, there will be a massive pullout of that liquid money, because that's what it is. There's so much of it now, it's almost like water up there, which will cause a massive collapse. And the idea that 30,000 has been struck as a deal simply because at that point there won't be any more real money left that's not tied up in the Dow Jones. So at that point, that's about as much money in there as they'll ever get. And the object of these bad guys is that they will draw their money out and make a run for it. Now, if they were to do that, there will be a catastrophic collapse. And there's no doubt about it. You can't go from a 30,000 down to something like 10 or 15,000 without a huge implication. So if we think about the 1929 Wall Street crash, this is potentially far, far worse than that. Now, I'm not going to get too dismal about this, because what's happening is the traditional industries in both the United States and Great Britain are contracting, while the technological industries are expanding. And I don't just mean Silicon Valley. There are a large number of small, medium-sized businesses now investing in very, very advanced technology. And much of this is due to come out of Antarctica. But of course, that's not what the public will be told. This will be sold as, well, we've been working on this for 5 or 10 years. But nevertheless, this technology is going to be released to the corporations. but not just the corporations, some smaller organizations. And President Trump is banking on this to boost the economy rather than the usual, well, you know, unemployment is the lowest it's been for 17 years. You know, the growth is really good, et cetera, et cetera. The idea that this new technology, which will consume gold, silver, platinum, iridium at a vast rate, which will wallop up the prices of precious metals to feed the new technologies that are just about ready to come forward. So any crash or collapse in the Dow Jones could be offset by the technology stocks, which won't collapse but will hold up. Now the question is, the people in the know, the top people, will have heard what I've heard. They'll do everything in their power to stop the Dow Jones reaching 30,000. Why would you do that? If you were a huge corporation and you know that if the stocks are pulled out, your company is finished, you'll do everything you can to prevent that happening. So it may not reach 30,000. There may be a huge concerted effort to get it, you know, around the 28,000 mark. So please watch that. That's really important. Talked about these high officials who were watching the game playing out with the missile. Of course, it didn't go the way they expected. There's further information apparently that has been given to President Trump regarding more about the Clintons and about the Obama. Clinton was more powerful than Obama in the shadow world, but as Obama was the last president of that line, a lot of the information was passed to him to manage. And I understand that some of that has been leaked or gained, which again is bad news for them. Wanted to talk about an interesting guy who was, I think he was Irish originally. His name was Peter Sutherland. He was the chairman of Goldman Sachs. He was also an EU commissioner, and he founded the World Trade Organization. Very, very Illuminati, satanic type of environment. And he died very recently. Now, it's not so much how did he die, but the fact that he's dead has opened a door, and we ought to be looking for information that starts to come out now. So when some of these key players die, whether they're taken out or whether it's natural causes, the reason for not going public on certain things was obviously because that person was still there. And with him dead, there's going to be some changes there. I wanted to also talk about Prince Andrew, and they're talking about the royal family in Britain. I'm sure that Prince Andrew doesn't listen to me. But if he was listening to me, I'd tell him to be very, very careful. Very careful, because, you know, there's a lot of things about children that even the most uninitiated person couldn't cope with, couldn't stand with. To hear children being hurt or abused, people are not very forgiving of that. So I would just say of Prince Andrew, he needs to be incredibly careful and think about, you know, that the world he inhabits now is changing dramatically. We're not all going to be wiped out. There isn't going to be a nuclear holocaust. We're not all going to be, you know, reduced to living in mud huts and sharpening sticks and living off moss and mice. And we have a fantastic future as a human race ahead of us. Absolutely no doubt about that. And if these people want to have a part in that world, they've got to start, you know, taking responsibility and behaving in a true human fashion. So in the last sort of 2 weeks, there's so much happening on this planet. It's not just, you know, perhaps 2 years ago we would look at terrorism being an issue, or we would look at Brexit being an issue, but now every sort of side of anything is showing movement, mostly towards the good. So please bear in mind, do your own research, see how it goes. I think it's all playing out now, and 2018 will be the year of real advancement real change. So that's great. So thanks, JP.
Excellent, excellent. So, shall we move into our question time?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, here's a nice one to start with. From Scintilla. Sometimes when I wake up, I see what looks like very big black spiders on the wall. They're always moving. I can see them for about 30 seconds and then they disappear. Are those archons, and should I be worried about this?
We don't want to be worried in the sense we want to be fearful about it, because that isn't any good and it just makes them stronger. But we should be concerned about it. I take that to be AI. Some people call AI manifestations as archonic. I'm not overly bothered about the label we use on it. What you're describing could potentially be a type of demon, a djinn, but the artificial intelligence likes to manifest itself as a spider simply because it, let's say, has a sense of humor. It doesn't, but it understands the concept of a web. It understands the concept of many strands and information being passed from all of the edge of the web into the center, which is a very hive-minded, artificial way of controlling stuff. So it liked the idea from an organic point of view of representation of a spider. More people than perhaps many would think will see this. It's just when you wake up, generally, less so just before you go to sleep. But it's normally when you wake up, you will see them either on the wall or the ceiling. Some of them look like, in the Western world, what we would call harvest spiders. They're very, very thin legs and the body's quite long. Some people refer to them as walking robotically. Some people say, no, it was quite organically walking, usually very quick. And they just disappear, which obviously tells you that it's not a real spider that you bought in from a bunch of bananas from some hot country or from a local supermarket that's hitched a ride on board. This is something very fourth dimensional. So what, on the information you've given me, I would say that that was artificial intelligence. They are not just spying on you. When I won't go too long on this, but in mind control, in the highest types of MK Ultra type mind control, a black spider is connected to the subject's back of the head to connect the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. So some of the arms of the spider connect into the brain, actually go into the brain of the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. And what this device, I call it a device, not a spider, what this device does is that it can scramble information. It can take charge of the individual. It can manipulate memories. And often it's done when the individual has got a fourth dimensional entity placed inside it. I don't mean a reptilian. I mean one of these small, demonic-y, sort of part reptilian, but they're more demonic. And this is very much part of the satanic Masonic culture, to place these entities into traumatized children. But they will often have the spider as part of that. Now, also individuals who have photographic memories or are savants, very, very gifted, very intelligent, they often will have a spider. And you know, I've sometimes talked about Doctor Who, not the modern Doctor Who, but the old Doctor Who. One of the directors of the old Doctor Who in the 1970s was fascinated by black magic. He actually studied it. Now, I'm not saying he was a black magician, but he researched it meticulously. And many of the Doctor Who stories contained elements of truth, which we don't even see now. They won't even put into films. And I've said before that I've always said that if you want to battle off a demonic djinn, you use iron. And in one Doctor Who episode, called not the demons, it was called the daemons, Doctor Who actually holds off a djinn with an iron spade or a trowel. The only time, to my knowledge, on television or film industry, they've actually been allowed to show you the truth. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is that the very last episode of a Doctor Who, my favourite Doctor actually, called John Pertwee, it was called something like The Spiders of Metabilis, and these spiders descend from the ceiling and land on people's backs. Now, this was, I think, made in about 71 or 72, something like that. But there's the definite implication here that this individual who was writing the story or making the story understood that these black spiders, which were, could not be seen by any of the others in the film, in the series, they couldn't see the spiders, but there they were on the individual's backs. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Now, don't worry, this spider, if it's on the wall, it's not what you've described, is much more of a spy spider. So it's observing you. Some people see them, some people see mice, but it's usually a spider. So it's a really good question. I'm glad to be given the opportunity to answer that for you. You want to know what you're going to do about it now to defend yourself. You can psychically defend yourself against these because they are fourth dimensional. They are not coming through in the pure physical. So you need to meditate and find your own way of self-defense. There's lots of ways of protecting yourself. I'm not going to go through it now, but that is your answer. You have to psychically defend yourself against these creatures. Thank you for the question.
Great question. And, yeah, many more questions coming out of that. This is from Branley. Are reptilians born out of an egg? And if so, does that mean they have no soul? Also, how long do they live?
I think originally they were, but the vast majority of them now are genetically created. Yes, they have a soul. Absolutely, they do. mustn't get them confused with some of the greys that were only created as space travellers. If you are going to spend 1,000 years in space, and I know people might laugh at that, but that's a genuine truth. You need a body that is robotic, or at least it's part organic and part something else. It's something you don't need a soul in that. It's just purely a living, and I call living in terms of the tissue. There is tissue in these creatures. Something that can resist G-forces. You're coming into the Earth's atmosphere, making lots of very, very tight turns, change of direction, to a certain extent because of the gravitational effects, because of the power plant and the way the power plant acts on the outer shell of the spacecraft. A lot of that gravitational force is not actually felt, but nevertheless there is some. So if you have a creature that is it's more like a doll, really. I don't know how to describe these things. You can go through all of that without having any discomfort, really. But a reptilian is not that. A reptilian is a living creature, and as such does contain a soul. So yes, there are some from eggs, but most of them, the bodies are cloned. They're ready. They're hanging up in a wardrobe or a closet, waiting for the soul to go into them, because it was found to be far more cost effective. And I don't mean money cost effective. I mean time and energy, because look at it this way. It's a warrior race. And regardless of what you may read on the internet, there are not that many of them. Not really. So if you have an army of 100,000, what's the use of children being born who are going to take however many years to reach maturity to be soldiers? But if you have these bodies in the prime of life, whatever that might be, already waiting, and you just put the souls into those bodies, you've got them there and then within half an hour or so, they're ready to go. So from a production point of view, that makes much more sense. And you can also manage your population. But some of them are born as you might describe. Although some reptilians actually have a mammalian type of birthing system. So yes, they have souls 100%. So thank you for that question.
Fabulous. Now, slightly connected. This is from Roman in Russia. Simon, on the last radio show, I asked you about the meaning of human eye color, and your answer was about elite's attitude towards people with different eye colors. Could you please reply again, but from another perspective, which is the perspective of the soul's cosmic origin, which constellation the color is typical to, and thus character traits of a human this soul inhabits. For example, people with green eyes seem to be connected with reptilians that mostly come from Orion, and such people might be more inclined to lead and control other people. That's a sort of little idea. So yeah, there we go. Eyes.
Okay, I'm happy to do that, but I don't want my answer to be used for witch hunting. I don't want my answer to lead to somebody saying, well, I'm not going to talk to that person because their eyes are this color. We do have to be incredibly careful. The word reptilian has received a terrible press. Rightly so, if you understand certain aspects of it. But wrongly so, if we hit everybody with the same label. I will remind people that if you have a reptilian soul, but you have consciously chosen to support the human race, to fight with the human race, to be part of the human race, and to believe in the outcome as a positive for the human race, it doesn't matter what your soul is. You have chosen to be good. I mean, I know there are Palladian people, according to, most writers, anyone who's Palladian is wonderful and fantastic. But there are many Palladians who are evil. So we must be careful not to make a decision because the way someone's eye color is, or their accent, or their skin color, or the way they dress, or the car they drive. Okay, that's my entry warning there. If you're from the sixth dimension, Lyra, I would expect you to have brown eyes. If you're from any of the fifth dimension, you're predominantly going to have blue eyes. If you're from the fourth dimension and you are a human type creature, you will have brown eyes. The green eyes, something that occurred off planet, but was extensively genetically engineered on Earth when the mixed fourth dimensional energy. I'll have to explain a little bit. Places like ancient Egypt, Babylon, Sumeria, these were enclaves of fourth dimensional power. This is a third dimensional Earth. The Earth doesn't actually like fourth dimensional energy. Why would it? It likes fifth dimension and higher. The fourth dimension is an adversary to the third, but nevertheless, it was created by Source. It does exist, and it can live in harmony, providing the fourth energy doesn't wish to expand. The difficulty is that the fourth dimensional energy has a number of elements to it, which we give labels to. So this is just an energy, but we will call it Satanism. But I don't see it as Satanism. I see it as a spike of energy coming off the main flow of energy, which is evil, simply because when that energy acts upon a human mind, or a part human mind, for reasons I don't understand. I don't understand it because I'm not God and I'll never be God. But when it acts on a human mind, it does something to that human mind and flips the mind out. So that part of that mind becomes, for want of a better word, evil. You could take a perfectly decent guy, expose him to fourth dimensional energy, wrap it up in rituals, and you then have a devotee to Satan, or you have a devotee to a Masonic lodge, or you have a devotee for this, that, and the other. So it's not the energy per se that's evil. The spike of energy when acting on a human can cause that. Now, the people who are responsible for all this understood that. So when they wanted to create places like ancient Egypt, Sumeria, Babylon, they took this fourth dimensional energy and they crafted it. They were able to use it like a potter. He or she we'll make on a potter's wheel, we'll make a vase or whatever. And they could do the same. They could craft this energy by altering its frequency, altering its sound waves, its color, so that when it affected a human was drawn down this particular road. And they understood that. And so they created things and they stuck it on money. That's why money is the way it is, because the whole concept of money has this, a fourth dimensional spell, a spike of energy, which, is like chocolate. It's like, they call it a moth to the flame. It is something that draws people who are not guarded against it. And so we have a situation where those people who are very, very long time ago were involved in some methodology of power develop green eyes. Green eyes are associated with fourth dimensional energy. But just because a person has green eyes doesn't mean they are evil or a black magician. It means, God knows, 20,000 years, 26,000, 100,000 years ago, that soul in that body inhabited a body that had responsibility and power within a controlled fourth dimensional remit. And so that sticks. It's very hard for someone with green eyes to change the green eyes. It's much easier for them to change their belief systems and to go from the dark to the light. And remember that official statistics roughly say that of the entire population of the planet Earth, and I don't know how many billions there are, between 1.8 and 2.2% of the population have green eyes. Well, that really brings it home to you. So if we just went on the top end and we said about 2% of the entire population of the planet, only 2% have green eyes, and you begin to understand that this was seen as an elite trait and given out to these people who had that connection. So I hope that helps with the answer. Thank you.
Very good. Now, our next question is from another regular, Nocturis. If a person has a past life as a very evil person but came back because they wanted to change and evolve, will they be able to ascend, or will they have to live with the consequences of their past life forever and be left behind when humanity ascends? Big thanks for both of you and JP.
Good question. A very good question. No, the answer is that they have every right to ascend. The point about being on this planet is to have experiences, not to learn. Let's get it right. The point is to be given the opportunity to do whatever you want to do within a construct. But if we have an experience, the key is, what do we do with it? So if someone takes a sharp pin and sticks it in your finger and you go, ow, and you draw your finger back, you have received an experience. You have had a physical reaction to that. So far, so good. But now comes the thought process. And as humans, we are very capable of, a bit like a chess computer, and I don't mean AI, so don't worry about that, but like a chess computer, we can play out moves in our head, and we can think, well, why did that happen? Why did I do that? What's my response here? And if I'd done this, would that have been different? And that's learning. Now, we don't have to do that. We can either walk away from it and say, I'm not bothered. We can stick our head in the sand. Or we can say, I'm going to fight you, because that's where I respond. Or we can say, maybe I shouldn't have put my finger out there. So maybe it's not about blame or fault, but maybe I need to learn. If I don't put my finger out there, I won't get the pin in it. So next time, I won't make the same mistake. So that's a very sort of rough and ready example. But in terms of our day-to-day life, if we are learning that we can make mistakes, and that we can do things better, and we want to help other people, then we are changing our pattern. We are changing our way of life. We're changing the way we thought. If we think, well, 3,000 years ago, I was doing this, that, and the other, I wouldn't dream of doing it now. Why would we say of that person, you know, 2,000 years ago, you did this, you know, you're going to burn in hell. What about a person who was really good 2,000 years ago really good, did some wonderful things, and in this lifetime started doing very evil things. Would we say, whoa, 2,000 years ago you were a really good person, we'll just overlook what you've done in this lifetime and we'll let you ascend? No, it's about a trajectory, a pattern. We look where we start from, we look where we finish in terms of where we start on our chart, because remember, the human soul doesn't finish, it goes on, but we'll just call it 0 and 12. So if we start 0 as a good person, and then by 12 we're a bad person, we've obviously not learned the right lessons, so we won't ascend. But if we start in a very dragging down deep energy, because I don't like good and evil, a very dark, heavy, dense way of life, which we would rotate as evil in this world. But over long, long years, we change, and we change our jobs, and we change our outlook, and we no longer want to be involved in the power game. We move away from money in the traditional sense, and we start trying to devote our life to help others. Well, we've gone from the dark to the light, from the negative to the positive, from one energy stream to another. And so that person has clearly learnt their lessons, therefore they're ready to evolve. So it's not what you did yesterday, it's what you're doing today. Thank you.
Excellent, right. That's another, oh, that's the same person, but they, right. Last year, Simon, you were asked was asked about what you thought Donald Trump's past life was. Hmm. I feel he was a Chinese emperor, perhaps Qin Shi Huangdi, who was the first emperor who built the Great Wall of China, and or Sun Tzu, who wrote The Art of War. Trump wrote The Art of the Deal, and he is building a wall. Simon, you said to ask again after Trump had been in office 6 months. It's been a year now. What do you think his past life was? Good question.
I'm really, what do we say in England? We have a word, chuffed. I don't think that means much to, I hope it doesn't mean anything rude.
It means you're very pleased.
Yes, yeah, I just hope it doesn't mean the wrong thing. I'm really glad that somebody has sat there, hopefully listened to the last 6 months worth and had a calendar and ticked it off and thought, right, I'm going to ask him that next month, 1 month to go, and I'll ask him. And I'm really pleased that someone has remembered and listened, because, you know, I will answer your question, but I've got no time. I'll be honest. I've got no time for people who stand up at a conference, give a talk or do a radio show, and then people say, oh, I didn't like that. And the person, the speaker says, oh, I don't care what you think. Yeah, I don't care what you think. I really do care what my audience think. That's why I do what I do. And it's just ridiculous to say, I don't care what people think. Because if you don't care what people think, why would you stand up on a conference? Why would you do a radio show? So I really do care. So thank you. I'll give you my answer. I absolutely agree with the Chinese connection, but I can't say who he was. I absolutely do agree that he's had a past life. He's had many, but he's had a past life to do with China, with one of the Ming dynasties. That's all I got on it. But whether he was an emperor or whether he was the guy that put the shoes on a horse, I couldn't tell you that. But yes, there is absolutely no doubt in my mind. And the reason I asked you to come back 6 months later was because with many people who have a complicated energy history today, they've had a complicated history from the past. And I sometimes find some people very mixed. When I look at someone, I will pick up on one or two facts and completely miss something else. But when I come back to them, maybe a month later or 6 weeks later, I think, oh, yeah, I didn't see that. I picked that up. Because it's to do with the person on the day. If the individual is very fired up and, you know, very excited, then past life connections will come through that resonate with that energy. If then 6 months later I saw that person, they were much calmer, you know, more relaxed, then a different type of past life energy is prevalent, and I'll pick that up on. So that's it. So great. You're on the right market. You may well be right. I can't confirm it either way. Thank you for your question. Thank you for listening to the radio show so loyally. It means a lot to me. Thank you.
That's lovely. Now, I've just come across a rather long question, I'll try and summarize it a little bit. It's from Nocturus again. He's a fan of rock music, and one night he was going to sleep and playing music at the same time. But then it suddenly changed. One second ago, it was just a regular song with vocals, a guitar, drums, and bass. But then it changed into the ugliest sound I've ever heard in my entire life. The best way I can describe the sound I heard was distorted energy, because there was no beauty, love, or life in that sound. It was as if that sound was made specifically to inflict sadness, anger, and hate upon those who listened to it. The sound really scared me, and I immediately sat up to take off my headphones. One of the things I skipped. One of the songs on the album is about suicide, and that came, and this is the song that he's talking about. But as I sat up, the song changed back to the same song it had always been before. I know this may sound weird, but I believe for a brief moment I was able to decode the song for what it actually was. It was as if I saw a face behind a mask, and I have not been able to listen to that song since then. Could you explain what it was that happened?
I strongly urge you not to listen to that song ever again. Don't listen to it. why would you want to? You're absolutely right. Don't even try to listen to it. There are, in my mind, there's more than one possibility. So unfortunately, I can't say to you, oh, yes, that's what it is. But what I can do is tell you that the possibles, and then you'll have that to work on. Right, one possible is that the music did not change, that you were going off to sleep, a fourth dimensional or a satanic or both energy took control of you for a fleeting second and manipulated your brain into hearing on the same frequency but slightly altered that feeling, those words, but that feeling. That's one possibility. The second possibility is that the music really was changed, physically changed. That can happen. I've got recordings of certain things that are in the physical have been changed. It's quite possible that that was really physically changed. And the third one is the one that you're wondering about, whether somehow you decoded a hidden carrier wave, a hidden message within the carrier wave, that was subliminally attempting to subvert people. Whichever one of those goes through, we obviously know that it's evil. We know it's not good. Heavy metal, that sort of music has often been used as a bridge into the youth, into the young people. And in many cases, the rock bands, heavy metal bands, do not know they're being used. Many of them are mind controlled. So they don't see anything wrong with the symbolism around them. They don't see anything wrong with what they say and what they do. It's only in later life that they wake up to what's been happened and they've been abused. Some individuals within groups are fully aware of it, but vast majority have no clue that they're being used in that way. So I can't say to you which of those it was. But I am absolutely telling you, you don't have that, because if you were targeted, then you were targeted for a reason. And that was the frequency on which they were attempting to get into your head. So chuck it out. If you've got it in the house, chuck it out, get rid of it, and don't have anything more to do with that particular band. Not because they are evil, but because the music they're producing, has been hijacked, for want of a better word. And you're obviously very sensitive. I don't mean sensitive in the sense of you're weak. I mean sensitive in the sense that you're able to pick up things that most people don't pick up, which is good in one way, but not so good in another, because it means that you'll be targeted. So I can't tell you exactly which one it is, but my advice to your question is protect yourself. Thank you.
I'm not going to say which song, but the album was by a band called, get this, Simon, Disturbed.
Oh, God.
So, says it all, guys. Anyway, so, from another of our regulars, Pseudo Cerberus, who was talking with you, were you talking about the captured Draco? Dear Simon, unfortunately, I haven't yet found the recording where you comment on a captured Draco. However, on the 7th of February, 2016, he's been trawling, at 15:03 on the CC show, you answered my question regarding soul devolution. At 17:32, you say to me, if a creature is faced with going back to relearn or being removed, then often you prefer to relearn it. And he says, I remember the feeling of plummeting from high consciousness into lower densities. That single primal note at the edges of nothing, which is to say all things. Devolution was my path, but it might not have been. So my question is, in the context of a soul choosing between being devolved or being removed, what is removed? What would it feel like to be removed? Can anyone come back from being removed? And and if so, in what form would they return?
Right, okay. Is this the question where we originally kicked off by asking me about a general?
Yes.
Right, so, and I said, yeah. No, I don't remember that. And it wasn't a general, it was Anu. Right, that's fine. I do remember that question. I'm not surprised that I do remember it. Perhaps I can elucidate a bit more. Only Source has the God-given right to terminate what it created. It doesn't, out of choice, do that. There are a number of negative entities that have the capability of temporarily imprisoning a soul. It is the greatest crime of any multiverse to attempt to kill the soul. And woe betide anyone who actually tries to do that, because the penalty for that isn't death, but it's basically being ostracized or pushed out of the known understanding and placed into an environment that I can't even begin to describe to you. Just imagine a box that's got no light in it, that's just black, and it just goes on for ever and ever. It's a sort of a transportation to hell, basically. So vast majority of races and individuals don't go down that road simply because of karma. They don't want to have that. If you are so unspeakably bad, I don't quite know how that would be, but if you're so unspeakably bad, then if a large body of good beings, be they humans or, I don't know, Council for Wise or a Federation, doesn't matter what, suddenly project against you, and the outcry from this mass of human or human type beings is so strong that Source, if the critical position is hit, Source will actually become involved. Now, entities can also become involved and can have like a judgment, a court case. But generally what happens is that entity or that being is banished. That's the word I wanted. Couldn't think of it before, banished. However, there are a very few cases where Source or an agent for Source, for want of a better word, can say to an individual, either you will be terminated and you will cease to exist for all time and ever time, or you can go back, I don't know, I don't know how many thousands of years, millions of years, you can go back and lose all the learning that you've gained because that learning was tainted with evil, and you are the person today because of your learning. And the only way to start afresh is not just to go back to the start of the board, the start of the game, but is to lose everything that you've learned. And in fairness to you, you start off again, and I, Source, will place you in a different position than you started from, so that you don't necessarily go down the same route. And so the individual has to choose between doing that or just being switched off. Most, because of the thought of death, I don't mean physical death, as you know, the thought of death of the soul is such a mind focuser that most beings would actually wish to start again at the beginning. So if you talk about a fall from grace, if you talk about descending, then it's not about necessarily descending the dimensions. It's about this loss of all of your learned DNA history, which has made you the way you are, and you've been put in a new position to perhaps go at a slightly different track and to be a different person than the person that you are now. So I perfectly accept what he said. What he said to me describes fairly accurately what happens when an individual is offered that choice, but says, actually, I'm going to have another crack at it, please. Pop me back and I'll start again. Now, just to add to that, when that individual, these individuals are all monitored. We are all monitored. That's why we all should appear in the Akashic records. But when that individual starts to show some real positive development, then they are fast tracked. So instead of taking a million years to go from point one to point three, it might be done in 100,000 years or 10,000 years, as a reward for developing and changing and doing something positive with that life. So yeah, that's a really good question. And thank you for listening to me. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
From Jane Armitage, Australian Aborigines. Question, who influenced the genes of Aboriginal people of Australia? Where did they come from? Do they have a role in the new earth? Thank you both for making such a difference. Blessings upon you. Australian Aboriginal, not Austrian. Australian.
Yep. Okay. Obviously different from North American Native Indians, but not that different. Where an indigenous native person or group who have in recent years not embraced the mechanical technology, those individuals have maintained a stronger connection to the earth and the planet, which means that their soul connection has always been not non-warlike, but been more balanced. It would be dangerous to say a particular off-planet group. Sometimes an individual group can establish itself and be isolated for whatever reason, and it becomes inward-looking in terms of its environment and doesn't have invasions from other peoples with other ideals or other cultures. To answer your question, the 35% off-planet and the remainder would be of a human type. If we think about the Hopi Indians and we think about how the Hopi talk about these insect beings that came to them and, you know, gave them knowledge and taught them about the stars. Now, I don't know if that's a mantid race because there are more than one type of insectoid being, but I would largely suspect it would be a form of a mantid or a mantis that has done that. You'll find that individuals who are caring on the planet, such as the native Indians or Aboriginals of any sort, and connected in a way that the industrialized world doesn't really value and sees them as an easy target. Well, those individuals have a greater understanding and awareness of their place in the multiverse. They understand that they're not the be-all and end-all, that they are a part of a great moving game of life and death, death of the physical body, of course. But a beautiful dance is the best way I can describe it. And they are a part of that. Now, you won't get that, I'm afraid, if you're reptilian. unless you go through some great self-healing, and that is quite possible. But I think you'll find that the majority of them are a non-human, non-reptilian alien species that has successfully combined with a indigenous human soul and created pockets of communities that are inseparable from the earth. And one of the greatest crimes of humanity, one of the greatest crimes, was to exterminate these native peoples. And you know, he was only, what was it, 1860, whatever it was, when Colonel Custer lost the battle of the Little Bighorn. How long will it take people from the Western world to understand that just because somebody paints their face with paint and doesn't dress with a suit, a shirt and a tie, and doesn't necessarily fire a gun but uses a bow and arrow, doesn't go to the doctor to buy medicine, when will these people begin to say, you have an exact right to live your life as you choose, and I have no right to impose my will and my values on you? Now, we're not even there yet, but we've moved on a long way since the days of Colonel Custer, although when we think recently with the oil pipeline, it was almost like Colonel Custer was riding in again to push the oil pipeline through. So the big business, corporations, you've got land, you've got resources, we want them, we'll give you these nice little pretty glass beads if you get off the land. So that's the problem, that these very, very beautiful people did not come here to fight and make war. They came here to be left alone and to live a life. And you're predominantly not very human if you're like that, I'm afraid, because the human psyche has been hacked by the fourth dimension, which we were talking about, satanic evil energy, and only the advancement of our consciousness can overcome that hacking. So yeah, it's a really good question. Thank you.
Excellent. So, Simon.
Tea time.
Yes, it's tea time. And do you like Beethoven?
Huh. Are you going? Excuse me. I'm just eating.
No, sorry. Look, I'll just read. Eat a biscuit.
Are you going to say roll over?
No, as I actually in the chat room just a few minutes ago, Susan posted. Susan's a sound healer. And she says, recently Bashar advised us that music chords played in the first 3 minutes of Beethoven's Symphony No. 7, second movement, are exactly and precisely what will tap into the idea of healing and letting go of the past, of sorrow, grief and regret, and the forgiving of ourselves. So if you don't mind, let's play.
Okay. I know that the fifth was called the Emperor. What was the seventh called?
I've no idea. We'll find out, and we'll come back to that. Here we go. Listen to these chords, people. That's the one. Yes, that's right. This is the one that works. There was some Beethoven, and that was the seventh movement. The seventh symphony, and the second movement of which, did we find out what one is called?
I didn't look. I was too busy having my little biscuit.
I'm sure that, where's Norm Freedom when you need him? We have a classical buff in the chat room usually in the later evening, and he knows all these things. There we go. Number seven. Thank you very much. Welcome back. Do you want to do your regular thing?
My thing, my regular thing. I love
please,
it.
Please, your thing. May you do.
Yes, I want to thank people who, so kindly donated. I'll run through them. Tom, and just for those people who think that, you know, I'll only thank people who donate over a certain point, that's not true. This is a Chinese lady, I think, or gentleman, I hope I'm pronouncing right, Haruni, who donated me 45p, which is about half a dollar, and then after PayPal took its cut, I got 23p, which is about a quarter of a dollar. So everybody gets a notice as long as I've got the name through. Sometimes I miss people, but that's not deliberate. It just happens. So Andrea, Valoria, Dr. Valerie, Charlotte, Bjorn, Alicia, Donna, the gorilla guy, he's still there, going strong, Natalie, Alan, Enrique, Bernard, Alex, Catherine, Sue, Edgar, Kent, Tina, Alicia, Benjamin, Ryan, Paul, Sheena, Beta, George, Bernard, Cheryl, Imogen, Manuel, Elena, Nathan, and Catherine. So those are the ones that I've pulled out for this one. I want to thank you all so much for caring and helping, and I greatly appreciate your support. Thank you.
On to the questions. Alexandra from Slovenia. Hello. In Slovenia are mandatory vaccinations. My son and his wife decided to vaccinate their baby despite all the arguments against vaccinations. Is it possible to protect the child with visualizations like golden aura and mental activities because he is too small for detox? I'll be very happy if you can answer the question.
It is possible, but there are probably only a handful of healers on the planet capable of doing that. It is one of the greatest crimes that this vaccinations across the globe is becoming mandatory. And for many people in government who are obviously unaware, they think they're doing the right thing. They genuinely believe that by taking the choice away from the parents and for the government to actually run the lives of people, they think that's the right way to go, because these people think that the parents are not capable of making the right decision, and therefore the government will come in and make that decision for you. That's incredibly dangerous. It's a dangerous way which creates a big split between the government and its citizenry. Country after country is going down the road of enforced inoculations. In many countries, you can't get your child into a nursery, a creche, a kindergarten, unless they've been vaccinated. You can't access educational facilities. You can't work in certain jobs. And then people start to homeschool their children. So the system then comes in and makes it harder and harder and harder to homeschool. I deeply hope and believe in a time when organizations like Connecting Consciousness all over the planet get together and will be in a position to compel certain governments to go back on these decisions. I don't think there's anything wrong in me saying that. There are certain things where a government has gone too far, and we need to be able to change this direction. The number of people that are suffering from inoculations is becoming greater and greater. And you try, as a parent, you try and take your government to court. Even if it's proven in a medical investigation that your child died or became brain damaged or suffered some form of disability because of a type of inoculation, you try and take that government or that health place to court. Might take 20 odd years before it's heard. Another deliberate ploy by the system. So there are people who can undo the damage of many of these inoculations. Not all of them, remember, not all of them are bad, but many of them are. And it's obvious, often not the main constituent of the inoculant. It's the additional metals that are placed inside it. And there are some healers who can do that, but there are not many, and they tend to keep their head down because, as you can imagine, if you advertised yourself as, I can do this, I can do that, then the pharmaceutical industry will most likely come after you. The best thing is to move. Now, I'm not, that sounds very glib, but I'm sorry. That is the best thing. The best thing is to move. Of course, you can't if you've got a job and you're stuck and they know this. But if you ever had the opportunity and you were faced with that, then get out of that country and go to a country that doesn't force it on you. It's an affront to humanity. It's disgusting and disgraceful, and it needs to change. Good question. I'm sorry. I can't give you any. I don't know anyone. I know there are a handful of people on the planet who really do this. You'll have to do a lot of research. If you look hard enough, you'll find them. Thank you.
From Daddy 15. Hello, Simon. Do you have out of body experiences? If so, can you share with us your most fascinating astral travels? And did you encounter any reptilians? Probably.
No. I encounter reptilians not through out of body, but when they really come and visit me physically. Or my, I don't call it an out of body experience when the soul in my body is taken out by mechanical electronic means and then taken somewhere, excuse me, to have an audience with these guys. So I don't call that out of body. What I call out of body would be when the individual consciously wishes to send his or her consciousness to a location like a remote view, or even if it's just round your bedroom. So you've asked me specifically, I think when I was about 7 years old, I remember coming out of my physical body and flying around the bedroom 5 or 6 times. The most interesting one, I don't suppose it matters now, was about, I can't remember how long ago it was, but Obama was a president, and I decided I'd just go and have a little look. And sure enough, he was there, and I'm going to be so careful what I say now. And he was with a child, and I immediately thought, oh my God, this is awful. And I realized it wasn't doing anything wrong. It was actually one of his children, but they were just close together. Because I knew the sort of man that he was, my initial reaction was really bad, but it wasn't. He was one of his own children. And then I went down under Capitol Hill, and there were a number of underground chambers guarded by, and I'm no expert on American troops by any means, but guarded by guys with a white stripe, very human, a white belt or white stripe down the chest, running from the left-hand side of the chest to the right, carrying a sidearm in a white holster, some of them carrying rifles, and some having white helmets on. And in one room was a grey alien. But this grey alien had a bigger than normal head, and he was writing, physically writing, with a piece of chalk on a chalkboard. There's no one else in the room, and he was writing not as we write in English from left to right. He was writing from bottom to top. So if you imagine an oblong chalkboard or a blackboard, chalkboard is the American word, isn't it? So if you imagine you put your piece of chalk at the bottom right-hand corner and you start to do your squiggles from the bottom to the top, then you come back down to the bottom, move to the left, and so on. So it's from right to left. And these squiggles looked very similar to not Sumerian, but more of an Asiatic, like a Sanskrit, much more like squiggles. And then the bloody thing, oh, sorry, I shouldn't swear, turned round and spotted me and was really angry that I'd caught it out, really annoyed that I'd penetrated whatever, and I was like, I don't know, 12 feet away from it. And I remember its face zooming up at me, and then I just flew back into my body, and this thing was chasing me, its face, and then I'm straight back in my body, and then it disappeared. So I don't know whether we'd call that a remote view or an out-of-body experience, but that's that and when I was 7 years old, flying around my bedroom are the only two experiences that I've had of that. The rest is when things come visit me or I get mechanically taken out of my body. So thank you for asking me that. No one's asked me that before.
Interesting. Thank you. Chemtrails. Are they controlled by the AI? They have an energy to them that doesn't seem human. Do more chemtrails go up when an energy in an area changes? Here in a Mexican beach town, there were no chemtrails at all in November. And then in December, they began coming daily, about the time that the seasonal residents started arriving. Is there anything we can do energetically to reduce chemtrails? Thank you, Marcos. The question is that they're all, lots of listeners and chatters are saying, you know, all of these changes seem to be happening, but they're still raining this stuff on us.
Yes, because the changes that we're seeing are targeting individuals at the moment. They're not targeting organizations. Now, you could say an individual is part of an organization, but at the moment, if an organization has 20 people in it and three of them are taken out, that organization doesn't cease to exist. You'd have to take out three of the key movers and shakers, and that's not happening at the moment. Maybe one key guy has been taken out and two lower down the ranks. But the organization is still ticking over, and that's why almost, you know, bi-monthly, I keep saying to people, don't drop your guard. It's not won. It's not over. It's improving, but by no means should you rest. And chemtrails is a classic example. Now, what we can take some, I will answer your question, what we can take some strength from here is that you said, and addressing the questioner, that in the month, 1 month there was nothing, and then the next month there was. There was a time when there was no stop between. It was just all the time. But because their system is being broken down, it's becoming a stop-go system. We might go out and find no chemtrails for a week, and then suddenly they come back again. That is because their authority is waning. All right, well, chemtrails are the whole host of things. There's not just one thing. There's a whole host of things. The most invidious is that which contains a gel and a bacteria stroke virus that lives in that gel. And that's, I think, what you guys had put on you because they were waiting for the rain. Excuse me. The rain falls, activates the bacteria. When the bacteria in its gel, which is a nutrient, hits the ground, you actually, if you look very carefully, you might be able to see this gel stuff on the floor, and you will get the smell. I don't know if you guys have been on the sidewalk or on the pavement, and it's been very hot for a week, and then it rains, and you get that very strong smell, that real unusual smell, and that is the bacteria that's on the sidewalk, on the pavement. As the water hits it, it grows into life, and that is what you're getting. Well, if they're waiting for the rains, then they want to drop that. They are doing that because they are putting bacteria onto the ground. So that's not good. The whole host of other stuff. What can we do about it? The best way to fight an organic attack is to protect your organic body. And that is, as we keep saying, eat organically, drink plenty of clean water, vitamins, just about everything and anything you can think of. That gives your physical body the best chance. Meditation, thinking positively about your body and your mind, targeting certain organs, thinking about certain things. Just as real, genuine healers can cure cancer in a person, so you are capable of repairing and sustaining your body. The soul in our bodies is in our bodies because it chose to be there and because it has a connection to the physical body. They are not separate, end of story. They're separate, but they're connected. So the energy of intent and power can move into the physicality, and you can change things up to a certain point. You can change that physicality. So if you are being hammered by these evil people, then you need to start meditating and you need to start protecting yourself energetically, psychically, and with the intent. Basically, I am not going to let this hurt me. I'm not going to let it affect my physical body. I refuse to allow that. Because if you live in fear, even at a low level, it will hit you. You know, the elite understand this, and I've said it so many times, that there are big corporations who pay for psychics to not come and heal their salesmen and women, mostly men, but to make them better salesmen, to make them make more money for the corporation. And some of the tricks they use sound out of the schoolboys, but it just shows you. So these salesmen often get, I will write down 500 times, I will be a better salesman. They'll write it down 500 times. Now what they're told on the physical is, well, you know, you're like a boxer who's going to go out and fight a big fight, and he's going to train hard and he's going to psych himself up. What they're not telling the people is that you are actually encoding or imprinting on your energy this pattern, and that pattern is then being transferred to your physical body. And that's what meditation is. You open that channel, and then if you say you're being attacked by chemtrails and you have an idea what's being done, because the local newspaper is full of people going down with this, that, and the other, and then you learn which part of the organ is being attacked or which part of the body. Let's say it's the respiratory, the lungs. So you have an intent that your lungs will be clear and that they will not be affected. Whatever it is will not get a foothold, will not get a grip on you. So you are physically looking after yourself, you're physically protecting yourself, but you're also energetically, spiritually protecting yourself. So when you combine the physicality with the energetic, then you have a really strong chance to go on. And that's what we must all do. It's a very good question. I'm really sorry these evil people are doing this. It won't go on for much longer, I promise you. It will stop. But it's still, as we've said, it's still prevalent at the moment. And will be for another few months. Thank you.
Here's a question from Christy. Getting to source with the power of our thought. Hello, Simon and JP. Simon, I know you've said that if we want to break free from the reincarnation cycle when our physical bodies die, then we have to go through one of the holes in the grid in order to get to wherever we wish to. But what if when we die we think ourselves to source? Are we going to be instantly teleported there? And will it still matter that the Earth is surrounded by the grid? The only concern I have is that the source might be a relative place based on personal belief system. But I hope I'm wrong, and our soul somehow knows how to get there. Thank you.
Right, okay. It may just be a small point, but we don't use the word die, because you don't die. Not the real you. Your physical body stops working. So you don't die. One of the training mantras that I give people who ask me these questions, say literally you have to decide whether you want to go back to the star family, your soul family, or whether you wish to go back to source. And, you know, why don't we discuss what the difference is and what the advantages are, disadvantages, etc., etc. Then the mantra is simply this. Every morning when you wake up, let's say you want to go back to God, back to source. Then you say, I wish to return to source. And when you go to bed at night, the last thing you say is, I wish to return to source. And you might say that for 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years. One day your physical body is going to die. But you know what? You won't know you're dead. You won't know it. You won't understand it. You won't accept it. You'll still be awake. But you'll suddenly realize that you cannot and motivate your physical body. Your physical body is not going to move anymore. But you can still think. You still know. You still recognize. And then, I have no idea of time here. What tends to happen is that the soul has to leave the body because it has to find another receptacle to contain it. So it will leave. And we've talked before about those that don't leave. You know, they cannot leave. But that's not the question here. So if you have, for the last 30 years, said last thing at night, I want to return to source, and in the morning I want to return to source, the first thing you say to yourself when you think, goodness me, my physical body is no longer working, the first thing you say is, I want to go to source. So you will go on the route to source. The question is, maybe in that length of time ahead, there will be no mesh net around the Earth. But let's just say, for argument's sake, for the question that there is, if your intent and your belief is strong enough, you will find one of these gaps in the net and you will get through it. Now, you talked about a belief system. You said, what if it's, you know, it's a belief system? Well, that's almost saying to me, what if source doesn't exist and we're just creating that? No, the belief system was the Bible. The belief system was God. That is a construct, in the sense of the creation of God through religion. That is your construct. Source is not a concept. Actually, it's a very real living entity. The great creator, there are other creators. It's not the only creator, but it is the great creator. And if you manage to get back in front of source, it's not like standing in front of the headmaster or the principal. What will happen simply, I believe, is that source will say to you, where do you want to go now? Whereas if you say, I want to return to my star family or my soul family, that family will take you back and you'll come back into that family and you will find your place within that family, and maybe you'll do another 10 million years there before you decide you want to go somewhere else. So people who go to source do so because they have a question to ask, or they wish to be judged, and I'm being very careful with that word, or they wish to go somewhere else. Those that go to the star family do so because they're desperately sad, they're missing their true family. They never really loved it here on Earth. They love the planet, but they don't love the rules and regulations, and they just want to go back to their family. That's what they want to do. And of course, the vast majority of people don't understand this, don't care, or don't seem to care. And they think that when they get to 100, they're really happy because they reached 100 and that's the end of their life. And I look at these people and I shake my head. I said, you really believe all of this around you? It's just so that you can do 100 years on this planet. You look at it all. Look at the complexity of it. This isn't a chance. Some overarching intelligence has created this. And you think you'd only want 100 years here? I don't want 100 years here. I mean, some people have had enough of it, frankly, and they want to be away. But there isn't another place like this anywhere. This is a fantastic place. Every morning we wake up, we should say, fantastic, brilliant. What am I going to do today? I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do some good, or I'm going to have some fun. You know, not, oh God, it's Monday, how horrible, I don't want to get out of bed. You know, this is fantastic. If your physical body was dead, you wouldn't be able to get out of bed. So aren't you lucky that you're alive? So there is a source, God, great creator. I don't think it's bothered about labels. And it does exist. There is I call it the creational chamber. That's my own terminology for where we are made. This creational chamber. So it's a good question, but I can assure you that source is real. Thank you.
Okay. So now this is it's really interesting. First of all, this is from Silver Speed. Dear Simon and JP, first of all, thank you for your invaluable efforts to raise humanity's consciousness at this time of convergence. Interesting one. Simon, a few CC radio shows ago, you spoke of human interactions nowadays between each other being more akin to the reptilians' warlike manners, especially with their harshness and competitiveness towards each other. If I'm correct in recollecting, is the Viking warrior energy related to such reptilian mannerisms? And why is the Viking warrior behavior being fed and projected into human consciousness at this time as well? God bless and Godspeed to you both. See you below.
Good
question. Thank you.
Good question. Good question. Actually, it's positive. It's not negative. Right. For each energy, there's a counterbalance, there's a counter-energy. And as crazy as it may sound, the counterbalance to the reptilian warrior is the Viking warrior. The Vikings contained a soul that was either Andromedian or Palladian, sometimes Arcturian. But generally, it was Andromedian or Palladium. They were the sole enemies of the reptilians. They were very human, generally speaking, although don't, let's get confused with the gods like Thor and et cetera, because that's slightly different. That's the gods. But the humans in this particular group, which is Scandinavian in origin, had higher human souls. Most of them were. I bet there were some of the reptilians, but generally not. So, although the Vikings are incredibly bloodthirsty, and most Palladians can be actually terribly bloodthirsty. Let's, you know, cause this controversy four years ago when I said, look, not all Palladians are sweetness and light. They had to be tough. I said it, the Palladians had to be tough to fight off the reptilians. You don't sit round, you know, smoking a pipe of peace and expect these people to be decent to you, because the Red Indians learned that. They offered the pipe of peace, and look what happened to them. Now, anyway, that's an argument we don't want to get into, but basically there is an element within Hollywood and Hollywood the like that is anti-reptilian and is trying to push this this non-reptilian line. The problem is, of course, that it's all gory and axes and blood and, you know, but then of course they've got to make money. That's why they're doing it. They're making money. They're making a film. They're making a TV series. They're doing whatever. But the questioner is hit the nail on the head, as we say in Great Britain, spot on here, because throughout British history, the Viking has not just been used as a symbol of fear, but almost like the Japanese samurai, as a code of conduct. So the Viking code of conduct, you know, I will sail from here to there and I will do it. I will keep my word. And this is very much not just a reptilian thing, but it's much more of a higher human, a Palladian or an Andromedian thing about, you know, being honorable. So surprisingly, it's not about trying to push a reptilian culture. It's actually the opposite to it. And I want you to think back to the TV serial, The Game of Thrones, and how the King of the North and his followers looked quite Viking in the way they were dressed, rugged clothes. Somebody was telling me that they'd been to a local furniture store, and this is true, that the capes they were wearing were actually rugs or carpets bought from a certain Swedish sort of furniture store. But they have very Viking appearance in terms of the way they dress. And so there was another emblem here, because in the last episode of the eighth series, or the one before that, they were fighting the undead. And if you remember, the leaders of those of you who watch the series, the leaders of the undead look very Anunnaki. You know, they call the King of the Night, or the Ice King. The skin's absolutely bleached white. And this is a take on Anunnaki. And so all the undead are just undead, the usual zombie horror movie. But the heroes are dressed very Viking style. So what we've got in these last few years is a confluence of energies. Even artistic people don't know they're being used for good or for evil. And they are putting their work out there, and they are bringing together concepts which are inexorably meshed to the reality of the history of this planet and to its future. So they can create art, or they can create poetry, or they can create a film or a TV series which is playing out exactly what has happened in the past and what is to happen again in the future. And when a artistic creator, he or she does that, their work is very successful, because it somehow connects to humanity. And there's truth in this. They may not understand that, but they will go and they will see that film, or they will buy that book, or they will talk about it, because it connected to them. Something that's just pure nonsense, just pure entertainment, people will watch it, have a good laugh. 2 days later, they've completely forgotten about it. But here we are, years later, after The Matrix, people still talking about it, or Blade Runner still talking about it. or 2001 A Space Odyssey, still talking about it, because there was real truth enmeshed in the story. And that's what makes it successful. So it's a really good question, thank you.
And Star Wars, which is...
Yes, of course, and sorry I missed that, but, you know, I've got to stop somewhere because there are so many good sci-fi and fantasy films out there that are rooted in history. We'd have to make a list one day.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's move on from Vikings to Simon, indeed. A personal question. And presumably this is, sorry if the question says, sorry if this is a question that has been asked before, but this is about your soul, division. Does it mean that you've been incarnated as reptile, human, and as mantid equally often?
Ah, what an interesting question.
Isn't it? Thank you, Catherine. It's a very, you know, people ask the same question, but they ask from a different perspective.
Exactly. They ask them in a different way. no. It doesn't mean that. What it means is that, in my case, no cultural element was given the upper hand. So the division of my soul was done in such a way that no one part of me could dominate the other part. However, I have one third reptilian, one third mantid, and one third higher human. Well, the one-third mantid and the one-third higher human, for want of a better word, gang up and outvote the reptilian third when necessary. But that doesn't mean that I've spent that one-third time reincarnating in those bodies. I certainly have inhabited a reptilian body. I certainly have inhabited a mantid body, and yes, I've inhabited a human body. But in terms of a percentage of time, they won't be equal. They will be different. So it's a really interesting question. Thank you.
Well, there you go. So, okay. This is about Avaaz. Have you heard of Avaaz?
Nope.
A movement with millions of online supporters and, so if you don't know, A-V-A-A-Z. So.
I'm still none the wiser.
Okay, but, all right. But. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, just tell us a little bit about it. Otherwise the question is thinking, oh, that's a shame.
It's a organization, a group. We don't know who funds it or what. But it, basically you get an email saying, sign this petition to save, 50,000, so-and-sos from certain such and such. Things like that, you know, charitable sort of, petitions that it collects. But, you know, I personally, well, I'll tell you my personal, feeling after you express yours.
I can say that I was chatting to a very spiritual Indian businessman earlier last week, and he said that there'd been a huge outcry in India because there'd been a lot of publicity about children in India, and you know, if you donate this money, then you buy them a computer, or you'll do this or you'll do that for them, and then it came to be known that these were just photographs, not even actors. They were just photoshopped, and people were donating money. And of course it was just not going there. It was going to the organization that had done it. And it was like an established organization, a proper registered charity that was doing it. So what was interesting is that what this Indian gentleman told me was the backlash in India now was that people were going to their friends and saying, I'm not going to give to charity anymore, but I will pay for your daughter to go to university. Or I'm not going to leave my will, my bequest to this charity or that charity. But what I'd like to do is your wife's got a disease. I'm going to give you the money now to pay for her to go to hospital. So individuals now are beginning to fund their own good causes, that they can monitor themselves, that they know where the money's going, they can see how it's being used, and they feel that they've done something good. And what we're going to see over the planet in the next 5 years is that right across the board, that the large, not all, but many of these so-called charities are blood-sucking parasites that draw money from individuals and have chief executives on sometimes £100,000, not all of them, but many of them on a huge salary, huge staff, huge offices, incredible organization, and many of them, not all of them, being very careful here, but many of them seek just to maintain their empire. And they stand or fall by how much money they get off the public each year. So their target is, how much money did we get in? How much did you get from donations? How much did you get from bequeathments? How much did you get from the big retailers or the big corporates? And then they'll produce glossy pamphlet after glossy pamphlet, internet advert after internet. How many times, I'm getting cross now, how many times have we switched on our internet to see a picture of an African child with a little bit of bread in its mouth, and it says, you know, send £2 and, you know, we'll feed this one. What in God's name is going on? This country and these countries around us are incredibly wealthy. Why is there a single child anywhere in the world who can't get drinking water, who can't get food? And yet, in Great Britain, they can find billions of pounds to upgrade the nuclear missile system. And yet here we go, we've got these pictures of these children. Well, where's all this money going? I know lots and lots of people provide money. So first of all, we have a complete breakdown of humanity, where it's okay to buy nuclear bombs, but it's perfectly okay to let children who are black-skinned, predominantly, die for lack of food or water or decent medicines. And then we've got these organizations standing up saying, oh, you give us your money and we'll go and do what your government doesn't do. You know, and every year we still see starving children. So no wonder so many people now saying, I'm not giving to charities. I will go and find a real good cause personally on my own two feet, and I will support that individual or that organization or whatever it might be. And I know that every penny I've given has gone to that cause. And if we did that, all of us did that, that would actually cause a massive change in the way the system takes so many of us for granted. excuse me, I've had in the last week 3 plastic bags. I don't know what they do in other countries, but they stick plastic bags through your letterbox and they say, here, fill it with the clothes you don't want. Fill it with your clothes and we'll come and collect them because we can get money for them. When did anybody stick a leaflet through my door saying, hey, you know those clothes you donated last year? Here's a breakdown of how much money we got, how much we paid our advertiser, how much we paid our accountant, how much we paid our chief executive, how much we paid our project officers, how much we paid our administrators. Oh, look, this is what was left that actually went to the good cause. But they don't do that. So I'm very strong about it. I think if we want to give, let's give to individuals directly. Thank you. Good question.
Okay. It's not exactly that. It's more of a activist kind of petition thing, but you made a valid point about charities and, you know, I completely agree. Plus there's more things that charities do that are used to launder illegal money and all that stuff. But let's just not go there quite there, because we got questions about other things. But Avaz, I believe, is a data mining, because basically you'll be revealing the things that you feel passionate about and you want to make changes about, and so that we can be profiled and, you know, targeted. That's my personal opinion.
Well, so sure.
From Johnny Meg, this is Homo capensis or Anunnaki. Hi JP and Simon. If Enlil and Enki are Anunnaki, sons of Anu the Draconian, then where does Anu the Anunnaki Lord fit in, or is he one and the same? There's another part. which is, I believe you said, the Anunnaki have a sort of effeminate body, pot belly, and elongated type skull. That seems to be a good description of Jacob Rothschild. Now, after reading about the big brain Homo capensis, they seem to have elongated skulls and big brains as well. I don't remember you speaking of Homo capensis, so can you tell us, are they related to the Anunnaki? Are the Homo capensis actually ruling the planet? Please shed some light on this.
Thank right. you. I don't think I've ever used the word big-bellied. It's not really my language. We've got to be very careful because there was an offshoot of the Nephilim, which were the giants. There was an offshoot of those which had what we would call the elongated skulls, which we can see quite clearly in many of the friezes or carvings from ancient Egypt. The gods were always generally depicted in ancient Egypt as having the mitre-type hats, a bit like the bishop's hat, really, but to cover the fact that the skull was elongated out. And when you talk to an anthropologist, he or she, with hand on heart, will tell you that if you tie bandages around a baby of 6 months old and keep it very tight, then that will force the skull to elongate. When you look at the drawings and carvings of ancient Egypt, there's no way that that could create these huge top-heavy craniums. So we're not looking at Anunnaki there. Anunnaki did not have the huge bulbous skulls. That is not Anunnaki. That is an offshoot of the Nephilim, which are a mixture of the native human, believe it or not, taken and mixed directly with what we could loosely call the gods. Now, there's a lot of debate about who are the Anunnaki, who are the reptilians, and who came from whom, and who did this and who was that. And you know, my narrative, I suppose, will differ from some, and they will differ from me. But I've made it clear that Anu, in the true sense of the word, was a reptilian god. There was holographic, I don't know, that's not really the right word because that's very primitive technology, but there was a type of a being that was infected. I was having a chat with someone on this not so long ago, infected with what we would call the AI black goo, which could mimic or create an image, but not just like holographically, could actually do it almost physically, hence the organic black goo. This is not the native black goo, this is the alien black goo, which was artificially intelligence infected. And so what I would say to you is that there are and there were more than one Anu. The trick is to know when you're talking, who are you talking to? Are you simply talking to a djinn that's been able to, you know, represent itself as Anu? Are you talking to something that's AI through the black goo? Are you talking, what have you? And the only way that you can have a reasonable stab at this is if you have more than one meeting. If you have, as an individual, it's not privilege, it's not the right word. If you have the opportunity over 10, 11, 12, 15, 20 audiences, visits, you begin to pick up what you're dealing with. This is providing you're not in a corner screaming your head off, but if you were, you wouldn't be meeting this thing regularly. And, you know, there are many people who contact me who say that they've been to Mars, and they'll explain what they've been. And, you know, my role is not to upset somebody, but I have to be truthful, and I will say to them, I don't actually think you've been to Mars. I'm not lying. I'm not saying you're a liar. What I'm saying is you were in your front room, something arrived and gave you such a wonderful expression of reality that you felt you were transported to Mars, because it had the capability of completely bluffing you. And yet there are people who really have been to Mars, really have been there. And so if you only have one experience or two experiences and it's in a very confined environment, how can you make a judgment? You can't, because you've not got that information. It depends on your soul as well. If you're a Palladian and you're whipped away by Anu because he doesn't like you, you won't have a soul history connection necessarily with that being. So you won't actually know him. You won't know the royal family behind him. You won't know the royal family, extended family. You won't understand that. But if you have a connection, then just as a faithful dog or a person looking at a faithful dog will recognize someone. For 10 years I haven't seen you, you know, and a cat sometimes will, you know, find its own home because it'll have that sixth sense. If you have those experiences, then you're in a good position to perhaps come to the truth. And so the story that I've given, I've hopefully consistently given over the last 7 years, I'm not about to change it now. But yeah, there will be other people that have a different take on it. And, you know, you just go with what you think is right. So, no, those with the big skulls are not Anunnaki. Thank you.
All right. This is from Sangreal. Monarch, MK Ultra and Secret Space Program. The question, an awful lot of people are beginning to remember and realize their involvement with dark projects like Monarch, MK Ultra and the Secret Space Program. Could it be possible that someone hacked these people's programming with a remember code executable at a certain time in that person's life? An insider, perhaps, or double agent? Thanks for all you do. Signed, the Fisher Queen. Highly coded.
Yeah. Well, you've got inside information. That's all I can say to you. Well done. I don't know how you got it, but you're spot on. In many cases, operatives working inside certain organizations were able to alter the code, and it was basically, many of these operations were both human and alien projects. Most of them did in fact have some non-human entity watching over it. And some humans working on their own, some humans working for a benevolent off-planet group were able to add a code that meant in a set period of time, the element of the brain that had been blocked would be opened and this would come through. However, there's also in the official programming that exists, and also when an individual human being reaches somewhere between the ages of 45 and 65, the controlling element of the programming naturally begins to break down because the human brain says, hey, I've been alive on this planet for 50 years. I'm pretty established. I've had a good half of my life. I'm ready now to face the things that have been bottled up, and I'm going to face them. We now have to add to that that the human resonance is changing, the energy on the planet is changing, and anything that's dark and evil, I'm being quite base here, anything that's fourth dimensional is now being pressured. And so the control system is breaking down. More individuals, for all of the reasons that I've just given, are now beginning to become aware of what was done to them. And this is part of the Great Awakening, which has started last year, actually, in a large number. And so you are absolutely right. That is one element of what's happened. That's inside information. I'm not surprised you give a code word. You're spot on. And only good people put that code in because they want those people to wake up. They want them to survive and start using their knowledge for good. So, yeah, good question. Well done. Thank you.
Fabulous. I think one more question. This is a question from Valerie. Quite long, but I'll nutshell it for you. She's asking if she happens to run into a reptilian or mantid and ask them if they're showing their natural self to me, the following knowledge could help me. The first is some basic stuff, like the color of reptilians' eyes and what is the word they use for their species, something other than obviously the word reptilian. Do they all speak English and wouldn't mind being called reptilian? Same question for the mantids. What color is the natural color of the mantid's eyes? What race do they call themselves? That's not going to be pronounceable. And do they use English or telepathic visions and feelings? And also, do most of or all of the genuine mantids and reptilians that live on Earth know about Simon Parkes? And what do they think about Simon Parkes? I tell them I follow Simon Parkes, would they respect that and go, yeah, all right. Anyway, Simon.
Ryan, I'm going to come at it from the reverse order. In 2012, a very desperate father sent his daughter across the seas to come to me for healing. This particular woman did not know, young woman did not know that her father was organizing it. At the time, neither did I. This woman had what we would call an MK Ultra background. For most people, the most horrific things had happened to them. You know, even for people who think that they know it all. No, you don't. And the only way to save this particular individual was to appeal to Anu to send an order down the pipe to this particular Masonic section, satanic section, to release this woman from their charge because I asked it. And that took about 2 weeks. And that happened. And that's why 2012, the car that I was driving and she was passenger in was hit at 60 miles an hour, and it was my car was completely written off. And for those who haven't heard the story, the vehicle that crashed into me was a company car. It was a van, and I'm not joking with you because they don't joke on these matters. It's so ludicrously funny, you'd think it's a joke. The car was a white van with an eye painted on the side, and the words, or the letters I, letter I, the letter C, and then U, I, C, U. And if you Google ICU, you will find it is an American detective agency company that specializes in recruiting retired FBI and CIA agents and using them for detective operations. And the driver of the vehicle was such a guy who had been mind controlled. He didn't know what the heck he was doing. He just turned the steering wheel and drove his car straight into mine at 60 miles an hour. Of course, we were protected. We weren't killed. And the young woman turned to me in the hospital. We were being obviously checked out. Police and ambulance, fire brigade. It was quite a serious crash. And the woman turned to me in the hospital and said, they, meaning the reptilians, they have asked who should die for this. So my reply was, nobody should die for this. They may punish, but no one's to die because if we sanction death, then we are as bad as they are. So, yes, they do know who I am because this woman was released from the human control and she was freed. So there's your answer. Yes, they do know. Okay, so let's talk about something much lighter. First of all, mantids, they wear a, like the greys, most of the greys, not all of them, they wear a lens shield. Mantids' eyes are huge, so they have a black lens shield. If you were to peel the black lens shield off a mantid, you'd see it's faceted like a fly's eye. Excuse me. There are faceted, the ones I've seen faceted, but they have a lens shield. This lens shield allows them to see in all or nearly all light frequencies, but it also communicates. It's a tremendous thing. It's sort of semi-sentient and, oh, it's a wonderful thing. It does X-ray as well. So their eyes are clear, but you will always see them as black because that's the lens they have over it. Reptilians can be different. They can have green eyes, red eyes, blue eyes, and a sort of a sort of a yellowy, light yellowish color eye. Skin version of the mantid is either the leaders have a darker green body, and the ones that are not so high ranking have a lighter green body. It's the best way I can describe it, really. Reptilians have a whole range of bits and pieces. What was the other questions? I've forgotten now.
What are mantids and reptilians call themselves?
From a cultural perspective, reptilians do not share their names. First of all, it's not an offence. That's not the right word. It's not done for a reptilian to share its name with anything other than a reptilian. The other problem is that I'm not going to do it because people will just won't understand what I'm saying. I don't mean they won't understand the sound I'm making, but they will just find it difficult to cope with. If you mispronounce a reptilian name, that is a huge slight. It is terribly offensive. The reptilians, and it's not a joke, there are sounds. There are sounds. You have to, if you're trying to convert their language, they don't have vocal cords in the same way we do. But if you're trying to convert it, it could be a name that, if you were to write it out, would be something like, I don't know, 8 inches long, 12 centimeters long. It's not something you need to breathe in between it. And they have shortened versions, which only the family may use. So each family has it. Now, the ancient Romans copied this so that if you took your dad's name and then you had a son, the son would carry part of the father's name somewhere in that name, and that would go on. And the reptilians are exactly the same. Within the family line, part of the sound of that name is a part of the sound from them. So they won't share it. Now, you'll often get humans that get connected by reptilians, and they will give an anglicized or an English version of their name. It isn't their real name. Their real name, it just goes off the sheet. But they will give a name that sort of, it's easy to pronounce for humans, and that's why they'll do it. They actually can use physical vocal cords as well as mental projection. Mantids can't really. They're almost totally psychic, and when they give you their name will hit you as if it was written down on a board or a name. So it will be on a piece of paper. So you'll see the stream of letters, for want of a better word, and colours, which will appear. And you have to be in tune to understand what those colours mean. And you know, in different languages, you put an accent above certain letters, if you want to stress them. Well, they'll use colours to stress certain things. So you're just talking totally out of most humans' capability to understand. That's why they don't do it. So they don't really talk about names, because they'll say, well, why will you need to know it? If you're talking about fifth dimension and higher, they'll have names that we can manage. Alex Collier, as an Andromedean soul person meeting fellow fifth dimensional Andromedians, has got names been given to him which are quite pronounceable. I think it was Mane or Mine or Mane, which we can manage because they are of human line. But when you're talking or dealing with creatures that are not human, they're not going to have the same concept as us. I think we're out of time, aren't we?
Well over it, but that's fine. It's a very interesting thing. Thank you very much, Simon.
Pleasure.
Anything, any final words?
No, just, this is really exciting times. Let's go for it. Don't buy into this. The world is going to end. We're all going to be blown to pieces and all the rest of it. It's just nonsense. We make of our lives what we want, and let's have a good time. It's going to be a good year. Thank you.